Welcome to the Connector Show. Today we are hanging out with Jason Stewart of Epic Fighting. He's got a lot of stuff going on. He's going to tell us a little bit about real estate, public speaking, all kinds of cool stuff that he's got going on. Telling us about his MMA promotion, Epic Fighting. He's doing a lot of stuff, making some stuff happen here in San Diego. Can't wait for you to hear the episode. Today's episode is brought to you by the Love Thy Neighbor movement. Make sure you check out all the stuff that we're doing, making some stuff happen internationally, San Diego, Modesto, and in Tijuana. So check us out at www.lovethyneighbormovement.com. Also, my boy Anthony Medina, he's got his AM Law Group helped us out starting our nonprofit. He can help you out too. He's doing criminal defense, immigration, family law, all kinds of cool stuff, helping people start businesses. Make sure you check him out at the sdlawfirm.com. Here's our interview with Epic Fighting's own. Get connected.
Yo, if you're C-O-N-E-C-T-A-D-O, you already know about the show, so let's go. It's your music and lifestyle, fashion profile, the entertainment source for everything you want to know about. North to the south, the east to the west side, stay connected with Ruben Torres worldwide, so let's go. Across the globe, well respected, beasting on an industry. Connected.
Another episode of the Connected with Ruben Torres show. Today we are hanging out with a good friend of ours, Jason Stewart. Jason is an entrepreneur, influencer, motivational speaker, a little bit of everything, man. He's well-rounded, just all-around well-behaved dude that everybody enjoys hanging with here in San Diego. He puts on these classy events, and he's got a lot of stuff going on in San Diego, but this dude is making moves. Welcome to the show, Jason Stewart. How you doing, brother?
Thanks for having me. I'm doing great. I'm here at the dog park right now with my animals and just relaxing. It's pretty chill over here. Beautiful day in San Diego. I can't complain.
Oh, yeah, man. San Diego's always beautiful, brother. Hey, man. Well,
it is.
Well, I know we're kind of short on time, but man, if you can give me a little bit of background on just the backstory, man. I know we've done some events in the past over at some of the kids shelters here in San Diego, and I learned a lot about you, man, and just listened to you speak to the kids, man, and your story is really inspirational. So can you give a little bit of that to the audience real quick?
Sure. Yeah, I'm surprised you asked. You know, that was one of the few times I ever shared too much into my personal backstory. And the reason why I did is because we were there together helping out it was a homeless shelter for kids. And so, you know, I had a lot in common with them, and I figured I'd share it and inspire them with it, hopefully. And but yeah, usually when I go to, you know, I go to these high schools and stuff and speak, I'm real brief on my backstory. And then they want to get into the business and stuff, but yeah, I'll delve into it. I mean, I was born in Charleston, West Virginia. It's a pretty poor neighborhood, and I lived there with my mother. My dad moved out to California, when my mother was pregnant. So I was with my mom, through growing up. And, well, actually when I was 3 months old, she came out to California to try to come out here. I think they weren't, I don't know if they were together or not, or what the story was, but to try to get me close to, you know, have the mom and dad thing. And, you know, my mom was kind of a rolling stone. She was pretty wild. She lived a crazy life. You know, she was on her own since she was 14, hitchhiking cross country and stuff like that. And so, she got in trouble a few times, and I have some pretty crazy memories of that, but one time I remember she got arrested and I ended up in the jail with her, and they were fingerprinting me too, and just, you know, kind of keeping me entertained and going through the motions. And my mom was in one of those holding blocks where I could see her through the glass. The cops were going there. They were kind of mean, probably because my mom was giving them lip. And so I ended up in a foster home for a short period of time. And from the foster home, I got, what is it called? An orphanage. I was in an orphanage. And from an orphanage, I ended up in a foster home. And then I got I guess, adopted by a family. I was only there for a couple weeks or something with that family. So my mom got out. I guess they didn't have anything to stick on her, so she was just in jail through the trial. And for everything my mom did, she never really got convicted of anything, which was pretty impressive from a criminal standpoint.
Right.
Because she was a pretty high level drug dealer and whatnot. But from there, I was in actually in California. That happened in San Diego, and I was here until about 5. We went to New York. Went to the Bronx. We in the South Bronx. I guess there was some big drug dealing opportunities for her there. And we were there for a little while. And then I remember my mom got mugged. I saw, you know, they brought us up to an abandoned apartment and had a knife to her throat and told me to read comic books. I was about 5-year-old. I remember that real vividly. Told us not to leave. As soon as they walked out, my mom peeked her head out and grabbed my hand and took off running. And then went and grabbed the cops. Cops didn't do anything. And so stuff started getting real. Stuff started getting pretty dangerous for a 5-year-old to be involved with. So she put me on a plane to go live with my aunts in West Virginia, back where I was born. And so when I went back to West Virginia, she said she'd be there in about 2 to 3 weeks. She was just going to make a couple deals, stack up some money, and hit me. And she ended up getting shot throughout those deals in her lung. And she ended up in the hospital for many years, actually 3 years. So I lived with my aunt for 3 years. So she finally broke out of the hospital. She was on the, while she was in there, they found out she was diagnosed with AIDS. So she wasn't supposed to live. Back then, when you had AIDS, you died. Like, it was very few people made it past 6 months back then. We're talking 85, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Up until she passed, there were doctors coming and running studies on her, figuring out how she was still living. I mean, she had every illness you could think of, once you have HIV, it weakens the immune system. And she had everything from diabetes to cancer and all that with one lung. I mean, it was a pretty thick file, medical file on her. She just kept walking, kept breathing, and lived a pretty decent life up till 56. Anyway, she kind of broke out because she knew she was going to die there on the third level. Same hospital as Born on the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. You ever watched that movie, with Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
Yeah, they kind of paint a picture of how that hospital really is. It was a really bad hospital to be in. And she was there, so she kind of escaped the hospital with her tubes and everything still in her, like using the that thing with the IVs as like a walking stick. Made it to a payphone, called some family to come get her. And, they said she weighed like 65 pounds when they got her. One of my aunts and my grandma got her. So anyway, she came back, got nursed back to health by my grandma, and came back to get me from my aunts. And then I lived with her. And that was an adventure up until about my first house. I moved out to California when I was 14. And then I lived with my dad for a couple of years, and then my mom moved out here too. And then we lived here until she passed, you know. I bought my first condo at 21, and that's when I moved out. But I even moved her in with me for a little while. So, yeah, me and my mom were pretty close. We went through a lot together. But that's kind of the childhood backstory. And, you know, we were really poor. We were on welfare, and where we grew up, that was the most, it's funny, it's the poorer the community, the more embarrassing it is to be on welfare or to have, like, secondhand clothes. So, you know, if you, in the East Coast especially, it's like you have to have the new Jordans, you have to have the new whatever's cool. You know, you caught Goodwill, your life's over.
Yeah.
I love it that these kids today think it's cool to go thrifting. My daughter goes, like, would rather go thrifting than go to Nordstrom shopping, which is great for me.
Right, yep, that's what I'm saying.
But back then, you'd get your butt kicked if you got caught at Goodwill or any place like that. So my mom, you know, she sold drugs. I had the nice clothes at school. Didn't want me to get punked.
So would you say that your hustle came from your mom? Because you're a hustler, man. You got a lot of stuff going.
I think a lot of it did. You know, some of the stuff that my mom, it was feast or famine with my mom. You know, she did break the rule, never get high, don't supply. I mean, she definitely was a heroin addict, and she did other drugs and stuff. Never was much of a drinker or never smoked much weed, though, interestingly enough. But yeah, she taught me things like, I mean, she definitely was the type to ask for permission, and that's kind of like how I get away with a lot of, business stuff.
Yeah.
You know, people tell me sometimes, you can't put holsters there, you'll get a fine. And I'm like, well, great. If I get a fine, that'll be the cheapest advertising I've had, because I've put up, you know, 100 and what are we now? We do 1,000 holsters every show for 30 shows going on. So, You know, that's 30 on the streets. If I get a fine for $500, I'm still ahead.
Yeah,
I'll pay that
good.
Fine gladly.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's all, you know, I'm always kind of don't necessarily play by the rules if it doesn't hurt anyone to break them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of how she lived life. She definitely was a hustler. You know, my people would definitely take notes from her about, you know, just survival or, you know, any way you can use the system to get ahead in her world. And, you know, when I'm around those types of people, whether it be in my real estate or whatever, I understand it. I don't agree with it a lot of the times, but I understand where they're coming from. I understand their mindset because I grew up with someone who had that mindset. You know, it's survival.
Yeah. So now you're doing, you got the Stewart Estates and you got the Epic Fighting. So are those only two companies that you got going on right now? I know you got your hands in a couple things.
Yeah, it's funny because everyone always talks about how I kind of involved with so many things, and they think that's kind of the key to success. And it's funny, I preach the opposite. I preach the key to success is to focus on less, that less is more, and get really good at one thing before you move on to another. But it's just kind of one of those things that at the same time, when an opportunity comes up and you feel like you can capitalize on it, you know, people like myself sometimes go for it. And yeah, we do spread ourselves thin, but, you know, I've been in real estate for 11 years, maybe going on 12 now. And, you know, that's been what paid the bills. I've been good at it. I've done well with it. It feels good. I've helped a lot of people buy and sell homes throughout San Diego County. And I'll continue to do that. You know, I love doing it. And then I ended up starting Epic and that was just one of those things that once the wheels started turning, I couldn't stop them, and it was just full speed ahead. And, you know, you've been watching it since the beginning, so you kind of know. But, you know, ultimately, it was a lot of hard work, and I didn't want to kind of start small and then take baby steps. I wanted to knock it out of the park the first show, and we really did. You know, if I can, without tooting my own horn, I mean, our first show was a huge success. It was a 4th and B. There were some awesome fights. It was a huge crowd. It was a block around the there was a crowd around the block. And so you know, it was one of those where you do learn from failure, but if you can succeed without failing, do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
not saying I haven't had a lot of failures and learned a lot of lessons along the way, but I was not one of those like, all right, well, let's lose 20,000 on the first show and just we'll do our best and see how it goes. It's like, no, this first show, people are gonna think we're a big deal. And it kind of happened that way, and since then we've just been doing shows ever since. And yeah, the company grows in different ways, but the actual experience at the show, I think, has been, you know, some shows are different than others, but I think every show we've had so far has been a success.
Yeah, and you have, I mean, you've been doing it for a couple of years now. Do you find that there's other companies, not just here in San Diego, but up and down the coast, that may take ideas from what you do? Or because your shows, like I've said in the past, I was like, man, I know I've told you this too. I was like, man, when you come to an Epic Fighting show, the shows are, the only way to explain it is like, it's just a sexy show. You know what I'm saying? And the way that you put it together with the cars and the celebrities and the way you got everything set up, man, it's just, it's a classy show. So, I mean, do you find yourself?
Yeah, I mean, flattery is I mean, imitation is definitely a form of flattery. And, you know, I don't get upset. I don't have a huge ego, and I don't get upset when people take our ideas. I look at it as, if it helps the sport, if you're helping the fighters, if you're creating something that the fans can enjoy, more power to you. I said from the beginning, my goal wasn't to take over the pie. My goal was to make the pie bigger, you know, help the whole industry. And with that said, you know, there's definitely been, you know, I see people pull something up and, you know, and I'm like, oh, that was our idea. Or, you know, they go straight to our sponsors that we get for the company or for the fighters. And next thing you know, that company is, you know, giving away stuff to the fighters that we provided for our fighters. But I don't get mad about it by any means. It's like, you know, I think one of the things I will say is that a lot of people underestimate how difficult it is to promote a show. Anything in San Diego is difficult because San Diego is a big city, not a huge city. And in L.A., you have the population to support a million things going on. San Diego almost has as much going on as L.A. without the population to support it. And so that's why you rarely see huge crowds at one place at San Diego events. You have to push and push and push really, really, really hard. I mean, you have a show on a Friday or a Saturday, you're competing with every club, everybody's having a quinceañera in San Diego, a wedding in San Diego, you're competing with every other event, every concert, you know, so stuff that's not even related to the industry can still pull people away. And so people underestimate how much it takes to put a crowd in, and they also underestimate how expensive a show is. I mean, you know, they, even if they do get a crowd, if they could even pull, you know, 500, 800, even 1,000 people at a show, they're lucky if they break even. You know, by the time you put together the production and the insurance and the, and pay off the commission and everyone like that, you know, you really, you could sell every seat in the house and break even. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And most people, that's why you see a lot of promotions come and go, because, you know, you just broke even and you just, and that's breaking even on paper. You know, breaking even on paper means, all right, you probably put over 100 hours into putting that together and you broke even. Well, what's 100 hours worth to you? You know, for me, that's a few real estate deals. You know, real estate deal, I could make 5, 10, 15 grand per deal. So, you know, you have to be either crazy or super passionate about it to do it, you know, because from the outside looking in, it's a stupid thing to do. It really is.
Yeah, I know. I've done a couple of events in the past too, man. It's no joke. Just the time and effort and
energy
into it.
Yeah. And so, you know, breaking even is a successful event. But when you look at that from the outside, it's like, how is that successful?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, like, you put so much time and effort into that. And so, yeah, we've had some shows where we've made some money. We've had some shows where we lost some money. But at the end of 5 years, I've probably put more into the company than I've made.
Yeah.
Actually, I know, in fact, that I have. And so, you know, that's why I do real estate, because that's what pays the bills. So the bigger the real estate deals I'm closing, or the more that I'm closing, the more money I got to spend on the show. And where other people might go out drinking, or, you know, I haven't really been on too many vacations. I don't drink. I don't spend money frivolously at all. My extra money goes into these shows, because to me, it's fun building the company. It's something bigger than myself. I think the staff feels it's bigger than them, and everybody is aligned with the vision, and people enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, you have a really tight-knit staff too, man, and everybody on your team, man, is on point. From what I've seen, everybody kind of, you know, brings new ideas to the table, and everything is just so tight-knit, man. Seems like a well-oiled machine. So, you know, congrats to that. But
yeah, well, there's definitely systems in place, you know, and I think once I can, you know, once I get a few more weapons added kind of to the team, as far as a couple other systems in place, it'll, right now I'm kind of the missing link that's holding it all together. But when I could find someone to kind of replace me, then I'll be able to travel more and stuff and then come back and jump into it when I want to. But, you know, there's been other promotions that have, they've done a good job, and they've pretty much, you know, it seems like, okay, well, if I just take his formula and recreate it, then it'll be a success. And other promoters have done that. Everything from my announcers, a matchmaker, post-fight interviewers, models, I mean, you name it. And to the point where people show up and like, oh, I didn't know Epic was having a show here, you know? Mm-hmm. And still not necessarily have the crowd that we've had, you know, all the same fighters, just as many fights and everything. And I think people realize real quick that I'm not just behind the scenes doing nothing and letting everyone else do their thing. I'm not just on vacation mode all the time or only doing real estate. Like after real estate, I have a background in marketing through real estate, and I've paid attention to what works and what doesn't. And I'm marketing the heck out of this thing, making connections, getting sponsors, putting, trading stuff if I have to, and making these shows come together and pulling in these crowds. So it is promoting. You can work as hard as you want at it, but it does take a ton of hard work, but there's a lot of skills needed.
Yeah, that's for sure. And because you don't actually fight. You don't compete, but I've seen you train. You do some training, right?
Yeah, I do some training here and there. Not nearly as much as I want to. I'm looking forward to getting that into my regimen to where I can start doing it like on a daily basis, you know. Well, but I have done it. You know, I used to do jiu-jitsu 3 times a week. I boxed when I was younger. I did taekwondo as a child, 3 years straight. Was really into taekwondo and then some other Eastern martial arts that were incorporated at our school. But yeah, I do. And I've competed quite a bit in the past. I've done some pancreation tournaments and submission fighting tournaments, and I wrestled in high school. I've done a few MMA fights. I've done some tournaments and some competitions for sure. But to me, it's I never had the goal of being like a career fighter. It's just something that I got to get out of my system every now and then. And, you know, you'll never catch me in a fight in the streets, I hope. So, you know, but I love it. It's something I've always been passionate about. I was one of those kids that I knew so much, you know, through training and stuff. I learned a lot of taekwondo and aikido and stuff like that. And I was just like wishing that I could get in a fight. But I was also trained to never start a fight, and that there's almost always a way to get out of a fight.
Yeah.
And so for where I grew up, where people would fight, you know, maybe once a week or something,
so
I would fight maybe once a year. So I only had a handful of childhood fights, but they all went pretty well for me.
Yeah. So at what point were you in your mind thinking, okay, the fighting part isn't what I want to do, but I want to promote, I want to put on some of these shows. At what point were you like in your mind knowing that was your aha moment?
Yeah, it was weird. I was reading a book Tim Ferriss wrote called 4-Hour Work Week, and I was trying to start something. He calls it a muse. He's like, don't even call it building a business, call it building a muse. And that's not what I built at all. But, he was into building something you work hard on for a year, you set it and forget it. You check your bank account every month to see how much money you made. And Epic is not that for me, at least not yet. It definitely takes a lot of attention and a lot of work. But the one thing that he said was, if you don't know what you're good at, what you know about, and what your passion is, follow your free time. And so I started checking my free time. I was like, well, I don't have a lot of free time, but let me see. What do I do if I don't work? After work, what do I do? Most of it was around MMA. You know, I was either taking my kids to practice, I was training myself. We used to train at SoCal Martial Arts Center, and then I started taking my daughter to Alliance Training Center. And then we would go up to Victory sometimes to get some extra training. And then I was training them in my garage. My daughter was doing tournaments. I started doing tournaments. I never watched football, never watched basketball, but I'd watch UFC real quick, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, I guess my free time is kind of revolves around a lot of MMA. And so I started coming up with different ideas. I was going to start a kids gear and apparel, and then a woman's gear and apparel. Those are the kind of stuff that came to my head because my daughter was training, and there wasn't a lot for kids, and there wasn't a lot for girls. And so I was coming up with those ideas, and then a friend of mine started kids apparel. So I was like, all right, well, I don't want to do that if she's doing that. And then this guy kept coming over training. I was like, I used to be a fitness trainer before I was in real estate. So I would do this, like, group workout at my house, you know, a few times a week, like 4 days a week at 6:30. And just random people would show up. And this guy kept showing up saying, hey, you should help me do a promotion here in San Diego. I'm going to do one in Albuquerque, and then you could help me do it here. And I thought that was the craziest idea. Like, I don't have time for that. It sounds like a lot of work. I'm not interested in that. And about the third time he asked me, I said, maybe this could be that extra thing that I've been trying to start, that like kind of side business, which ended up being a lot bigger than a side business. But once I got the wheels turning, he gave me the idea. He was, he had some value he thought he could offer, and he had some stuff he thought I could offer. And once I got started, I pretty much built the whole company, created everything from the, you know, I hired someone to do the website and to design the flyers and posters, but I had already put up the posters, the flyers, put together a fight card, hired the models, bought the insurance, got the licensing, and all that type of stuff within, maybe a month or two, something like that. And so after he did his show was May, somewhere around Cinco de Mayo, and our show was June 26th. I'd already had a set at the 4th and B, and he's like, man, I really have nothing to offer. He's like, good luck on your show. I don't think you need me. You've already done everything that I thought I could might help with.
Yeah.
And it turns out, you know, everything he got in Albuquerque didn't apply, and all the New Mexico stuff didn't apply to San Diego anyway. So, yeah, I just did it on my own. And the first show, and I never recommend anyone doing this, get you a team, get help. Don't be scared to ask for help. But the first show, I did everything on my own pretty much. I had very little help. My cousin helped me. You know, he helped me put up some flyers, and he showed up the day of the show. But I had very, very little help. And then the second show, I had a matchmaker, and a couple people were really asking if they could volunteer, and they really thought the first show was cool, so I had a little more help. And by the fourth show, we had a huge show, and I had a lot of help. And the fifth show, I actually told the staff, we would meet every week, and I told the staff leading up to the fifth show, I was like, hey, I'm not going to be here this show. Because on the fourth show, I tried to do a test run where it was like, you guys do it without me. Because my goal was to phase myself out and to be more of an owner and let the other people kind of run it, and then I could just jump in whenever needed and help out. And it was a disaster. The fourth show, I ended up working harder than any other show. We also oversold it by like 500 people. I mean, we were turning people away left and right. But so the fifth show, I told people I wasn't going to be there. And so the staff really started to panic. I said, hey, guys, you know, something came up. It's a family emergency. I can't be here, but I trust that you guys are going to do a great job. And next thing you know, their stress levels went up, which is what's needed when you're coming up on a show to make sure you get all your ducks in a row. And they got all the ducks in a row and everything, and I ended up showing right around the time the doors were going to open, and I just kind of went and acted like I was going to sit down and enjoy the show. And I had to put out a few fires, but for the most part, they handled it, where I tried to do the same thing on the fourth show, and nobody got anything together. They were all still kind of counting on me, even though I said, you guys can do this without me. They were still counted on me way too much. And so the fifth show, they kind of did it on their own, and I kind of tried to leave it on autopilot for a few shows, but I saw that if I continued to do that, the company wasn't going to grow, and there were certain things that I could do that we still didn't have people on the team that were quite talented in those exact areas. So jumped back in, but it's fun. It's been a journey.
And, you know, in San Diego, there's a lot of MMA going on. It's kind of like becoming like a MMA mecca. There's like people coming out, doing a Bellator, going straight to UFC, all kinds of stuff going on when it comes to MMA here in San Diego. How do you feel about the boxing scene in San Diego?
Well, it was just a boxing show last night. I didn't get to hear about the tournament. I heard there was 5 fights. A friend of mine, Bobby G, put it together. But, you know, I don't – I'm a big boxing fan. And I don't think it's any secret that boxing has died down quite a bit. And it's in danger of dying off. It's becoming like a, you know, an undergrowth almost. And I don't want that to happen. A lot of people think that people in the MMA – industry want that to happen. I really don't. I mean, you know, I remember as a kid back in the days with the Mike Tysons and the Evander Holyfields. I mean, those were exciting fights, and boxing can be, you know, as exciting as MMA, I think. It's just, we don't have that right now. I don't think they're promoting it the way they should. You know, I think you got two fighters that have all of the draw, and after that, if they don't create a new star, they're pretty much done. So boxing as a whole, I would like to see somebody come back and bring it to life, you know, whether it be the right promoter or the right fighters. And in San Diego, I think San Diego has a lot of talented boxers as well. It's just they kind of have to go to Mexico or to L.A. to if they want to fight frequently. You know, I give props to my friend Bobby D. He puts on a show for them, and hopefully he starts doing it more. I heard he's going to get back together with some people who were helping him before. He's decided to collaborate with, I think it'll be like some of De La Hoya's people and stuff like that. And hopefully they'll have it more frequently. But, you know, the pay is still better in boxing. It's just not that frequent, and the crowds aren't there, you know.
Yeah.
You do an amateur MMA show, and you usually have, you know, twice the crowd as a professional boxing match.
Yeah.
And, you know, and some of those fights are pretty exciting. Some of them are you know, I'm not going to lie. It's less than half of them are really intense and really exciting to watch. And then, you know, I'd say 50 to 60% of them, you're kind of like, ah, you know, especially once you're used to MMA, you're like, yeah, kick his leg, slam him, ref, calm down, let him fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, do something.
It does get annoying once you get into MMA. But you know, there's still some good gyms here with some good programs for boxing.
And as far as boxing versus MMA, now, you know, you could still make money doing some of the sponsorships with the fighters in boxing. And now the UFC has kind of switched that up, right? Because they've gone to Reebok, and now nobody can do any of the sponsorship. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, it was a risk, and not every risk will pay off. This one definitely paid off short term. Will it pay off in the long term? I don't know. I mean, I think Dana White's definitely a smart businessman. He knows what he's doing. But does it help the fighters? Well, that depends if you're talking short term or long term. One of the things I always said about Dana White and the UFC is people talk so much crap about how the boxers got paid so much more. And, you know, the sport was growing, and it still is. And yeah, he could have paid 6 figures to every fighter on the card, but then the sport or his company wouldn't have grown as fast as it did, you know? So you saw the company growing exponentially, but the fighter's pay was growing at a slower rate, but it still grew, you know, it still grew. Like, yeah, he could have had a couple people making $100,000. Well, now he's got fighters making, you know, more than that, like quite a bit. And then it got to the point where they were making a couple $100,000 just on sponsorships. You know, my buddy Chris Lieben said he made like over $100,000 just on Facebook and Twitter and social media for a fight. You know, that wasn't even wearing the gear or any of that. And so they still have those opportunities, I believe, to, you know, people tell, you know, fighters getting a lot of publicity, have them post up a product that they're using or something like that. So those avenues are still there. But the pay that they're getting through strict sponsorship has decreased by so much. It's decreased by a ton. Now, short term, that affects the fighters negatively for sure. Long term, will it help the company grow faster because they're making so much money from Reebok that you know, a few years down the road, that they'll just be so much bigger and so much stronger that they'll be able to pay, you know, higher purses? I don't know. Maybe. I hope that's what his plan is.
Yeah, it's tough, man. Because
but if I was a fighter, I'd be pissed. I mean, if you're a lower level fighter who's not good at getting sponsorships, you know, there may be a few people who aren't pulling in much sponsorship money, but for the most part, the company knows you're on TV. You don't have to be a genius to pull a few $1,000s, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 in sponsorships. You know, if they know you're going to be televised on pay-per-view or even or on Fox, you know.
Yeah. So what other opportunities do fighters have to make money besides the fights? Of course. I mean, you said social media. There's.
Yeah, so a fighter can promote stuff on social media and get sponsorships that way. So one of the things I've been really trying to do with my fighters is get them all connected with a sponsor of some sort. At least that's the long-term goal. I think the last show, I believe half or more than half of our fighters got some sort of sponsorship. Now, they weren't getting thrown a lot of money, but they were getting thrown some pretty cool stuff. I mean, a couple fighters got free chiropractic adjustment. For the rest of the year, they can go in and get a massage or a chiropractic adjustment. Shoot, I'll take that over $500.
Right.
We got one guy who got all-you-can-eat shrimp. One guy got a huge supply of Defense soap, which is a soap that I personally use it. I've been buying it for years. So to get, you know, they got the liquid gel and the bars and the all that stuff. So we connect them with a lot of sponsors, but you know, if you're a fighter, I would definitely build up some social media, get on there from time to time, do your Twitter, your tweets on Twitter or your Instagrams and your Facebook and all that fun stuff, and, you know, get some followers, and advertisers look at that. So if you got a, you know, me, I own a business. Whenever someone comes to me and says, sponsor me, it's kind of like, you know, you want to help the fighter out, but every fighter, you can't help every fighter. So what are you going to do? What do you have to offer? You know, and if it's like, well, I got this many Facebook followers and my, you know, there's going to be this person there taking pictures of me and I'm going to make that picture my profile picture. And, I'm going to be competing in front of this many people and it's, you know, this many people watching it. And then, you know, that, you're going to get at least some brand recognition from that. So, I would definitely try to build up a base and then when people ask, you'll let them know what you have to offer. You got to sell yourself. You really do.
Yeah.
Some fighters don't care about that. Some fighters, you know, already own a business or work a 9-to-5 where they make great money. You know, we have some fighters that are everything from firemen to very successful business owners. And a ton of our fighters, I'd say a good half of them, are broke, you know, and a huge percentage of fighters are. And so make an extra few hundred bucks per fight off of sponsors for sure. And that goes for amateur or pros. There's nothing stopping you from getting money from a sponsor. And I've said this for years, you know, we had fighters on the amateur level that had way more fans, sold way more tickets and made way more money than the pros. You know, a lot of pros are kind of like, well, I'm here to fight, pay me. And I totally see where they're coming from with that. But at the end of the day, advertisers want to see what you have to offer. So as a business owner, if I see an amateur that has, you know, thousands of followers and every time he fights, he sells 50 tickets, I'm choosing that guy over the pro who doesn't have a Facebook account and doesn't sell any tickets all day long, you know?
Yeah. What advice would you give any fighters that want to come in the game? Because I know you deal with a ton of fighters all the time. You see it all. You've been there, done it. What have you learned from some of these guys? Like, what advice would you give, whether it's, hey, man, you know, you did what you could, it's time to quit, or, hey, man, you know, this is cool, let's step it up to the next level?
Well, there's different types of fighters. There's fighters who do it because they're passionate about it and they love doing it, and that was kind of, you know, that was my mentality. It's just something that I love doing, I always want to do it. And then there's the fighters that they're career fighters. They want to actually make a go for it, make a living off of fighting. And so if that's the case, you got to surround yourself with great coaches. You got to, you know, and I recommend you do that either way. Surround yourself with great coaches. Become as great as you can be, you know. If you go to a jiu-jitsu class and everyone can tap you out, then you're not ready to be a pro fighter. You know what I mean? when you got white belts and blue belts that are just working the mat with you, you're not ready. If you, you know, if you go to box with someone and they're whooping your butt at every boxing class, you're not ready. So you have to get good. Your boxing, your Muay Thai, your jiu-jitsu, all of that really harness those skills and then put them together. A lot of MMA fighters just try to put them all together without having a good base at anything. And they can win a few fights like that. You got the people who, you know, they were a strong high school wrestler. They come out and they grind it out and get some ground and pound, and they win a few people who they were just so superior on the wrestling game. But at the end of the day, if they take a jiu-jitsu class, they get tapped out. They need to stay amateur for a while. Now, for the fighters who do it for the passion, the love of the sport, something they love, they don't want to, you know, they make, they're confident they're going to make more money with their day job than they're ever going to make fighting. A lot of those fighters, I tell them they should stay amateur. And the reason why is because, A, people think going pro means more money. That's often not the case. It costs a lot more money to go pro. You know, the physicals are more expensive. The license is more expensive. And people are surprised at how low the pay is on the, you know, until you really make a name for yourself. And some fighters never do. You know, they stay at that 500 and below purse. But the main reason is, if you're passionate about fighting, you know, we have fighters that used to fight every show. They would fight, you know, 4 or 6 times a year or more. And then they go pro. You know, I'll use Francisco Castro for an example. He fought like 10 out of our first 13 shows or something crazy like that. He fought on almost every show. He was fighting every month almost. And he went pro and went years without a fight. Wow. And he has a good job. You know what I mean? He's pretty high ranked in the military. He makes good money with it. And if he would have stayed amateur, he would have been able to continue doing what he loves, you know? Yeah. So for certain people, it makes sense to just fight and fight more often because that's what you love to do. But if you are looking to make a big name for yourself, yeah, dominate in the amateur. And if you have a losing record in amateur, you know, you got to look at who the opponents are and stuff. I mean, your record doesn't make you, but, you know, we've had these fighters that are like, you know, 2-5, and then they're like, yeah, I'm ready to go pro. And it's like, well, the guys that beat you aren't ready to go pro. What makes you think you're ready to go pro? And then, you know, sometimes they go to some organizations where, you know, sometimes the pros aren't technically on that level either, and they get a couple wins over there and they feel good about it, but they're never going to make it to UFC, you know? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, if you're trying to get paid, there's only a few promotions that you can make it to really make a career out of it. There's UFC, there's Bellator, and there's a few other ones that hopefully they make it, but those are really the only two stones right now. Mm-hmm. Overseas there's a couple, you know, you got the one FC, and, you know, hopefully World Series of Fighting stays. They've been decent, you know, paying well. But yeah, there's just a handful of places you can go and make a decent amount of money.
And what about on the promoter side? Like, what's the money making opportunities, and what's the ups and downs? Like, some of the, you know, there's got to be some peaks and valleys in being a promoter. Can you kind of walk me through that a little bit?
Yeah, well, like I said, there's very few promoters making any money. I mean, Bobby G is a personal friend of mine. He's been doing boxing here longer than anyone. And, you know, most of his shows, he doesn't make any money. He does it because he's passionate about it. He has the money to put on a show like that. And he told me personally over lunch, he's like, well, it comes down to this. If I don't do it, who will? And, you know, he's passionate enough about boxing where he doesn't want it to die. So, yeah, the money-making opportunities are somewhat scarce in the promoting world. I mean, you got money from tickets, you got money from sponsors, and then you might be able to sell some T-shirts or something, but that's usually, you know, a couple thousand dollars if you're lucky. So, and then, you know, I've seen promotions come in and they've tried to sell sponsorships for, you know, the sponsorship is $10,000 a show. And if you're charging those kind of prices, you need a bigger audience than what you're going to have show up there. And the way to get that bigger audience is you got to be televised. And so some people are kind of like in la la land when they think of how much money they can potentially pull. And don't get me wrong, if you got a good salesperson, you can pull a decent amount of money for an on-televised show. But a lot of those sponsors won't become repeat sponsors because they might not get the value that they needed.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of why we started doing TV. And so we were just on TV, last night? And we've got, I think, 8 or 10 more airings before this next show. And then we'll go back to, like, once a week until we get closer to the show. But, yeah, our ultimate goal as a promotion is to be on TV, multiple channels, multiple airings per channel. I mean, it's funny. I got into real estate to help people buy and sell homes, that I had to become an expert in marketing to get the opportunity to do it. I got into MMA because I was passionate about the sport and I wanted to create something to add value to fighters and MMA fans and to the people who helped me with my vision. But in order to do that, I have to continuously become more and more of an expert on advertising. And I think a lot of times you don't realize that when you go into business. It's like McDonald's. Everyone thinks McDonald's is a hamburger business. They're not. They're a real estate business.
Yeah.
Their real estate portfolio is one of the biggest in the world. The only one bigger, I think, is the Catholic Church, which is also a real estate business. I might get a lot of slack for that, but not saying the Catholic Church doesn't provide a ton of value, and I'm not saying that McDonald's doesn't provide, you know, some easy, quick meals for people at affordable prices. They definitely do that to accumulate real estate.
Yeah.
And for us, we're have to satisfy advertisers, and the better we get at that, at advertising for other companies and for ourselves to continue to get the crowd there to support the advertisers, the more we'll grow.
Well, and one thing that I got to say, I respect the hell out of what you do is you have a tendency of putting your money where your mouth is, and, you know, you get your hands dirty. But I've been at several charity events where you're actually there doing stuff, and it's not like you're promoting stuff. Like, you know, we've been at several just homeless outreaches where we're just out there handing out food and clothes and whatever. And it's not not an advertised thing. It's just going down and hanging out over in downtown on 16th and Island. And even like how we're saying, like the Stand Up for Kids shelter, all that kind of stuff, man. Like, you know, I think that's what really, draws me to what you do aside from the business stuff. On the personal level, I think, you know, what you do in the community is positive. I know you got a lot of stuff going on. Can you tell me any more of the stuff that you got going on with any other charities or community organizations?
Yeah, so one thing I've been very passionate about and I've been carving out more and more time for is speaking. So I'm trying to speak to as many students as I can. And it's funny you say that because I spoke to over 400, it was like 400 to 500. They call them at-risk youth because they were at risk of not getting their diploma. I think they're mostly seniors over at Chula Vista High School. But, and Harvey, who's with the company, he was like, "You mean you didn't pass out flyers to the kids? You didn't give them a promo code? You didn't even..." I was like, "Well, you know, I told a little bit about the company, but no, I didn't think of that." But yeah, it's really just going and adding value. I feel like the more value to add, the more abundant your life will be.
Yeah.
And so I just have faith in that, and I feel like, you know, just go add value in some way that you may never even see the connection. Your life will improve. Maybe not always monetarily, but money is not the only factor of wealth, in my opinion. And sometimes it will be monetarily. So I just, you know, have faith in that. But yeah, coming up, you know, I started this group with a friend of mine, Rich Brocchini, who is a chief Italian firefighter. He also started Third Alarm Coffee. And him and I were like, you know, let's put together a mastermind with some of the most respected people that we respect the most, and so we're talented. And so we have this mastermind group called Epic Mastermind, and we've got Sparky in it, who's like one of the top world leaders. She has the Make a Difference Foundation. So that's something that I really enjoy being a part of and helping any way I can. Luis Lopez, who got Teacher of the Year, and now he comes and teaches with this entrepreneurial growth type mentality. and he's getting us some of these speaking gigs at East Lake and Chula. And I'm happy to support stuff that he does. We're actually putting together as a group. This might be I hope I'm not letting the cat out of the bag too early, because this is definitely a group function. It's an epic mastermind event. But we've all been to a ton of the self-help things and the huge seminars and the life-changing events. You know, my daughter's at Tony Robbins right now, just having her life completely transformed, and that's huge for her at 16 years old. Yeah. She keeps sending me videos and stuff. And so, you know, from Tony Robbins, from Money and You, from Landmark, from The Secret Knock, and all these wonderful, wonderful events that I love going to and being a part of, we're actually coming. We had a couple things that no one else had that we felt like we could really add value in a seminar-type format. And then we're going to take some of the other stuff that we've learned and just kind of put our own polish on it. But we're coming up with our own event that we'll probably have our first one next year. And we're going to have some amazing speakers as well as some amazing tools and stuff that we can really add value to people. So that's one of the big things that we're all collectively working on between, you know, the founder of Unboots and our mastermind group. Ali, who came from Turkey with very little money in his pocket, he created the largest pedicab business in the world. He's in the group. Tommy Mosley, who's you know, second in command under Miles McPherson at the Rock Church. He's in our mastermind group. So you can see how diverse it is, you know, from the top church person to the top world leader, to some of the top business people, to the top education person. And so we're putting together an event, and we're always looking at ways to change lives. And if you know of a nonprofit that you feel passionate about, you know, we'd like to couple up with it with our Epic Biting shows and just try to bring more awareness to those as well.
Awesome. Yeah, man. A friend of mine was telling me about what you guys are doing too. And, you know, he's got that, the art collaborative that they do over in Barrio Logan, the church. And he was telling me.
I didn't even mention them. Ramon, he's a rapper. He had a very inspirational speech, and he rapped. And then Frank Luna.
Yeah, Frank Luna.
Who is one of the head guys over there at the church, where art is their religion. Yeah, we went over there, and we just completely blew their minds with one of the tools that we're going to add in our seminar, where we just take a problem that a business or an organization might have, and we just completely like revolutionize their way of thinking and throw ideas at them that no single person could do. But when you got everyone's brain on the same wavelength, it's like, you know, it's like this super brain where you're getting like power from the ethos almost. And it's just like, boom. And then the person leaves there like, whoa, they can't write down fast enough. You know,
okay. You throw them in the hot seat.
Yes. Throw them in the hot seat. That's it. And so, that's one of the things that we do that we're very proud of, and we want to kind of get that on a seminar-type level and just change everyone's life with it, because most of us have had it done, and it's been life-changing for us.
Yeah, awesome, man. Yeah, I'd love to come in and check some of that stuff out. I know, you know, he's been telling me you guys are doing a lot of stuff, so and he kind of mentioned a couple things about that event as well. So I know it's going to be an awesome event with all the people you guys got involved in. Is there anything else that you're excited about right now that you want to mention?
Well, I'm passionate about what the Mastermind Group has going on. I'm super passionate about Epic Fighting and what we have going. This next show is looks like it's going to be super impressive, and I just can't wait for it. I can't wait. I haven't had a show up at Sheraton in about a year, so I'm so excited to be back there. It's so much fun. You know, it's such hard work to where at the end of the day, you're like, wow, like, you know, it's just like you just ran a marathon, but you get so much fulfillment from it. Yeah. So I'm really excited about the direction the company's going and the cohesiveness between the people in the company and real estate. You know, I got a good practice, and I'm getting referrals. I got a referral today while I was at the gym. I checked my Facebook messages, and that was good. So my goal is to have that happen every single day, where someone sends me a referral to someone who wants to buy or sell or refinance. It's always a good feeling.
Yeah, I know.
And yeah, I'm sure there's
You...
Oh, and today's actually my son's birthday.
Uh-oh. And here you are doing this with me.
I'm excited about that. Yeah, I was with JJ all morning, and then I dropped him off. It's funny, we're visiting other people's parties all day today, and then he's having his birthday party tomorrow. So he's at his cousin's birthday. I left him over there with the family,
nice.
With his mom's family. And then I pick him up in a little bit to go to another birthday party up in Mare Mesa, and then he has a big party tomorrow.
Nice. I know you mentioned Tim Ferriss earlier, and you know he's you know super well known in the entrepreneurial world, and you know he's got you know the podcast, and he's an author, and he's got a lot of stuff going on. How important do you find to find a mentor when it comes to business?
Well, what you do, I mean, what I did, I was actually listening. It's a progression chain, but I was listening to Joe Stumpf, who was one of my mentor type. He's a coach in the real estate business, and he has some great tools in real estate. And I'm listening to him, and on one of his recordings, like maybe you'd call it a podcast, before you heard about podcasts too much, he mentions Tim Ferriss, and he had Tim Ferriss on one of his shows, and he mentions the book. So, you know, I get the book, and I read the book, and it's just like changing like the way I thought about so much. You know, one of the things my mom kind of implemented in my head was like, if you start something, don't finish it. And I was a firm believer in that. And I still am to a certain extent, but he was like, if you start something and it sucks, you're stupid to finish it. And I'm like, what? What? And you know, he's real big on the 80-20 rule and Parkinson's law, which is an inversion of the 80-20 rule. And I spoke about that at Castle Park yesterday. I got to speak to some students over there. It was really fun. But yeah, so that was really, that was life changing. And then I started following like everything that he did. You know, he has the podcast and he has guests on. One of his, best performing podcasts ever was with one of my really good friends, Jocko, who, he's actually a trainer / owner at Victory. And, The Scariest Navy SEAL Imaginable was the name of the podcast. And it stayed number one for a long time. Went down off of number one, and then went back to number one. So that was huge. And then from him, I learned about Gary Vaynerchuk. I read the book Crush It.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Tony Robbins has always been a huge mentor to me. So, you know, you get with people. For some people, it's Les Brown. And I really like him, too. I've had the chance to meet him and hear him speak live. So you get with people who are kind of in a line with what you're doing, you know. Yeah. Obviously, I listen to Dana White whenever he speaks, because you know he's in the same industry as me, and he's someone who, obviously, well respected in it. Like him or not, you know, he's accomplished some huge things, and he's an extremist when it comes to passion about his business, you know. And I can relate to that totally.
Yeah, that's right, man. And he's kind of changed the game up, man, and made everyone step their game up. So hats off, man. You may not like him, but he's doing what, you know, what you're supposed to be doing. So you can't hate on it, you know. But
yeah, I mean, he's like it, hating or liking, he's grown the MMA. Like, what would MMA be if it weren't for Dana White? Because the owners and stuff didn't have the passion. It was him. The people giving the money didn't have the passion. And yeah, it wasn't the money that grew it by any means. I mean, the money helped, but it was the passion, or else the money would have just kept going into a black hole, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree 1,000%.
So, yeah. And so, you know, I have a ton of mentors. You know, Steve Jobs, I like to study him. And, you know, I take these mentors and I study them, and I watch videos on them, and I read about them, and I try to, you know, apply what they do to my life. My brother once told me, the half-brother of mine, Sam Scott, I didn't meet him until I was 14, and he told me something that made a lot of sense. I'll try to get it right, but he said, dumb people don't learn from their mistakes. Smart people do learn from their mistakes. But wise people learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah, nice.
And something along those lines. So a lot of people just go out there and they make, you know, they just make mistakes that they didn't need to make. I mean, you're going to make some, but you can reduce them, the percentage of mistakes you make,
yeah,
by just look at what other people did and what didn't work for them and what did work for them. And that's why going to these seminars where you hear all these people speak about building their company, like you know, Brian Smith, who's in our mastermind. I got to know him from him talking about Uggs. And every time you see these uber successful businesses, you're like, man, they were lucky. They were at the right place at the wrong time. They don't see the years and years of struggle of just throwing money away and then not getting any results and putting tons of effort and not getting the results they want before they had that aha moment, how many failures they had. And he had a ton of them. And so, you know, you look at these people and you hear their story and you're like, wow, okay. And he did this, this, and that. Well, that ended up being the wrong thing to do. And then you seek their advice. But one of the things that, you know, people ask sometimes, how much do some of these super successful people get paid to speak? And some people do charge, you know, 30 grand, 100 grand or whatever. But you'd be surprised how successful some of these people are that will speak for free or that will sometimes even give you some of their time for free if they feel you genuinely want it and they can genuinely make a difference. Because the more successful the person is, the more available they are to help other people.
Yeah, that's
funny. Greg Reed, who he's the master, he gathers all these top people at his seminars, The Secret Knock. And they're amazing. They're here in San Diego, too. So I recommend everybody here in San Diego go to them. They were on Forbes' top three or four events that you have to go to for entrepreneurs in the world. But, you know, he has all these super successful people come and speak for him. And you'd be surprised the ones that come and speak. And they don't get paid, typically. But Greg Reed said something that I found to be pretty true. He says, the poor people are humble for the most part because they're poor. And so they'll give you the shirt off their back, some of the nicest people ever. He said most uber successful and rich people are willing to help as well. And they're really nice people and they'll give you the shirt off their back. They're looking to help people any chance they get. He says it's the people that are still climbing the ladder, the people in the middle, that, you know, $100,000 to $200,000 a year range. He said, those are the people that are too busy. I'm too good. I don't have time. He said, those are the assholes.
Oh, wow.
And so, and I've kind of found that to be true because, you know, once you start making six figures, usually you've come up ahead than most of the people you've grown up with or most of the people that were in your circle. And you kind of got this, you know, nose in the air type of mentality. But that's because you haven't met these people who make millions of dollars a year. And they don't have that attitude, but you're not surrounding yourself with those people yet. You know, you're kind of in that middle ground where I'm so busy and I'm working way too hard and I don't have time to help anyone else.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So, and as a business person, what would you say your strengths and weaknesses are?
Well, my strength is in speaking. I'd say my strength is in vision and making it happen. I'm a firm believer in find a way or make a way. So I can get an idea and I can build a company from scratch just off of sheer willpower. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just working hard and finding out a way. I think some of my weaknesses might be attention to details and accounting. No, I'm bad at, I don't always track my numbers as well as I should. So I try to have either systems do that or other people do that. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, sometimes it just doesn't get done the way it should.
Yeah.
So those would be my weaknesses. But yeah, I could probably think of a few more.
No, that should be enough.
On both ends.
No, man. Well, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I've you know, been wanting to hit you up and I'm like, dude, you know, I got to get with Jason, And, you know, I catch up with you on social media. I see you're everywhere doing something. And I'm like, man, this guy's going to be hard to track down. So I'm glad you made time, man, to you know, get on the phone with me here and do this interview, brother. So appreciate you. Appreciate
your
time.
I'm glad you asked me to. No, it's an honor to.
Yeah. And anything you need on my end, too.
I've always been really... I'll say that again?
No, I said anything you need for me, man, let me know.
Oh, of course. You've always been there. You've always supported us. And I've always had a huge respect for what you've had going on as well. You've always been involved with community and charity and helping out different ways you can. You've put together some amazing events, too. And those videos that you helped create early on, you know, they still get hits on YouTube and stuff like that. So no, you've been there since the beginning, and anything I can do to help you out, I'm here for you. And anything, and I know if I ever need help, you're there as well. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, man. Thank you. So how can people get in touch with you?
Well, they can email me info@epicfighting.com or, you know, my real estate email. They all go to the same place. It's buynsd@gmail.com, buynsd@gmail.com. JasonStewart.org is my website. It's just Jason Stewart, StewartST.org. And yeah, that's probably the best way to contact me, is just through email or through the website.
And what's the social media? I know you got some stuff going on.
Oh yeah, I got we got @EpicFighting, @JasonOStewart is my Instagram. I think @EpicFighting is Instagram and Twitter. I'm here with Charlotte the Friendly Wolf. You can follow her at Charlotte the Friendly Wolf on Instagram. And then on Facebook, just put in Jason Stewart. I've got a page. I'm maxed out on friends on my personal one, but I started a page. So now I'm posting everything on my page. It's Jason Stewart Entrepreneur page. And so that's where I'm posting the cool stuff there.
Well, right on, man. Well, thank you for taking the time, man. And I'll let you go. I know we're running out of time here, but anybody that wants to check
sure.
out. Anybody that wants to check out a nice, classy MMA show, man, here in San Diego, make sure you check out Epic Fighting. They got the nice luxury vehicles. They got the dopest DJs. Anybody who's anybody shows up to these events, man. So go shake some hands and, you know, walk up to Jason. He's a very approachable man, and learn a little something, man. So thank you, Jason, for your time, brother, and hopefully we'll catch up soon.
For sure, man. Yeah, epicfighting.com is where they can go to get tickets if anyone wants to check out the show. And if anyone doesn't have a copy of my book yet, fightquotes.com, check it out. It's on Amazon under Fight Quotes by Jason Stewart.
Fight Quotes, fightquotes.com. And tell me a little bit about the book. Where else can they find it? Any hard copies anywhere in any of the stores?
Yeah. They're actually selling it at the PSAR in Chula Vista. We're going to be selling them at the show. If anyone has a store where they would like to sell them, I just ordered a bunch of copies. I'm going to be giving out Christmas presents and stuff like that. But if anyone would like to sell them at their stores, they can. But it's a compilation of quotes from the greatest fighters of all time and all realms, from MMA to boxing to taekwondo and wrestling and you name it.
Awesome.
Bruce Lee, Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Robinson, Sugar Ray Leonard, Chuck Liddell, you name it, they're in there. So it's a very fun, entertaining, inspirational. I mean, there's all types of different quotes. So it's a good time. It's a fun book.
Awesome, man. I'm going to have to pick that up. And there you have it, man. You guys, make sure you stay connected, epicfighting.com. Stay connected with Jason, jasonstewart.org. And reach out to him, man, wherever you see him. You're going to learn something from this guy. So thank you, Jason. We'll be talking soon.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother. And there you have it. Stay tuned. Stay connected. All up in your ear hole. Connect with Ruben Torres.